Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, the long cold winter may have set us up for an especially intense allergy season that some have labeled a pollen vortex. The president of the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology joins us to explain what this could mean for allergy sufferers.
But first, as consumers, we're always looking for the magic bullet when it comes to vitamins, minerals, and supplements. The thing that might prevent us from developing cancer, heart disease, stroke, or any of a number of chronic diseases. We are not alone in this quest. Scientists and researchers frequently conduct ongoing investigations to determine which nutrients in the human diet can improve health.
The latest buzz centers around vitamin D, which has been credited with everything from boosting your immune system to preventing cancer. What are the actual benefits of vitamin D, and what studies are currently being done to learn whether or not it's effective? Dr. Joanne Manson, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and chief of preventive medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital, is here to tell us more about the promise that vitamin D might hold for better health. Welcome to Take Care. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We've known that vitamin D helps the body absorb calcium, which is essential for bone health, and many foods are now fortified with vitamin D for that reason. But now there's thought that vitamin D may help in a host of other ways that might not have been fully appreciated until now. What exactly is vitamin D, and what role does it play in our bodies?
Well, vitamin D is actually a prohormone. There is both a source of vitamin D through skin synthesis of the vitamin, as well as through foods and supplements. So unlike most vitamins, our bodies are actually able to synthesize vitamin D. But many people will require getting vitamin D from food or supplement in order to have an adequate blood level of vitamin D.
Why don't we start with sunlight, because we know that works with synthesis on the skin. How much sunlight would the average person have to get each day or week to get enough vitamin D to get their levels to an optimum point?
Well, it varies quite a bit depending on so many factors, including the latitude, the amount of sun that is out is going to vary, of course, by season. It's very difficult to get enough sun exposure during winter months at many latitudes around the country. And also skin pigmentation is a very important factor. So as a general rule, we do not recommend increasing sun exposure in order to get more vitamin D, because the ultraviolet light, UVB light, has been linked to an increased risk of skin cancer, and there are millions of cases of skin cancer each year in the United States. So actually, we don't recommend increasing sun exposure for the express purpose of getting vitamin D.
That was a question I had. If you wanted to do that on a limited basis, would sunscreen actually prevent the absorption of the good part of the sun that you want to help you synthesize vitamin D?
Sunscreen does interfere with the synthesis of vitamin D in the skin. However, most people don't apply adequate sunscreen or apply it fully and exactly the way it's recommended. So there's still some conversion of vitamin D in the skin with UV exposure, even in the presence of sunscreen. But it definitely reduces the amount of vitamin D synthesized in the skin.
So what are some of the natural sources of vitamin D? Can we get enough naturally through our diet without having to use supplements?
It is possible to get a moderate amount of vitamin D from the diet, but usually not enough to get up to the recommended intakes of 800 IUs a day. The Institute of Medicine now recommends for people above age 70. Some people can't get to 600 IUs a day. As a general rule of thumb, a serving of milk, a glass of milk, or most dairy products are now fortified with vitamin D, and it's about 100 IUs per serving. So a person who's having, let's say, 3 glasses of milk a day would get 300 IUs a day right there. There's vitamin D in fish, particularly dark fatty fish. Many people, if they eat fish frequently throughout the week, they can get a good deal of vitamin D from fish. And also cereals and other fortified products can be sources of vitamin D, as well as certain types of mushrooms.
So it sounds like what you're saying is, unless you're very deliberate about counting the IUs as you consume things, you're probably going to need to supplement with a vitamin supplement.
Unless you have a fair amount of dairy products and fish each week, it's likely that you may need at least a multivitamin to help get the amount of vitamin D that's recommended, particularly if you're above age 70. The recommendation above age 70 is 800 IUs a day, and it can be difficult to get that amount from food and may often require supplements. But not a large supplement. Even the amount in a multivitamin can help many people get to the 600 to 800 IUs a day recommended for adults.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
We're talking to Dr. Joanne Manson. She's a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and chief of preventive medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital. We're discussing vitamin D. And if you're not going to get enough from the sun or your food, you may have to supplement. Are there different types of vitamin D? And even at the grocery store now, they have several choices. What advice do you give people that want to take additional vitamin D outside of their multivitamin?
Well, it's generally recommended to take D3 rather than D2. D3 is the animal form of vitamin D and D2, the plant-based form. There's some evidence that the D3 is more bioavailable than the D2. However, some studies show very little difference, so it probably is not really a major issue whether you take D2 or D3.
Can vitamin D be toxic if you take too much? And how would we know that? What kind of symptoms might you have if you're overdoing it?
Well, the Institute of Medicine, the most recent guidelines from 2011, recommends not going above 4,000 IUs a day. And the dietary guidelines from 2011 recommend avoiding intakes above that level because they can be associated with an increased risk of adverse events. Certainly, getting above 10,000 IUs a day can increase the risk of a high calcium level and of too much calcium in the blood or in the urine. If it's in the urine, it can increase the risk of kidney stones, especially if calcium intake is also high. There's some research suggesting that higher intakes of vitamin D may be linked to calcium deposits in the blood vessels, what's called artery calcification, though I don't think that evidence is conclusive. But overall, most of the research now suggests that more is not necessarily better and that you can get too much vitamin D. And if you have very high intakes, such as regularly having more than 4,000 IUs a day or having a blood level that is above 50 nanograms, usually the labs will report it in nanograms, that may be linked to an increased risk of heart disease and all-cause mortality. But vitamin D deficiency is also a big risk factor. So it seems to be important to stay within a range of vitamin D intake as well as blood levels of vitamin D. But fortunately, that range is relatively wide, so you don't need to worry. You know, if you take a tiny bit more vitamin D than recommended, it's not likely to cause a problem. But if you're taking, on a regular basis, more than 4,000 IUs a day without the advice of your healthcare provider, you may want to reconsider that, or at least let your clinician know that you're taking that much vitamin D.
Now, speaking of that healthcare provider, every time I go in to see my doctor, she tests, she says I'm vitamin D deficient. You know, she tells me to take more once she even gave me a prescription. Is this typical? Are more doctors routinely testing vitamin D levels? And when they see a deficiency, what's happening in our bodies that's not good for us?
Well, many clinicians are testing vitamin D levels. The Institute of Medicine didn't recommend routine screening of vitamin D levels for the general population. You know, as a population-wide recommendation, most members of the population are reasonably healthy. It is not recommended to have vitamin D levels checked and repeated. However, there are situations where a clinician may feel it's important to test vitamin D in a patient, and that's completely appropriate. For example, a patient might have osteoporosis, might have had a fracture, may be very important to understand whether vitamin D deficiency is an issue contributing to bone problems. The patient may have a malabsorption condition. They may have celiac disease, or they may have other conditions that interfere with vitamin absorption, with fat absorption, and they may need higher intakes of vitamin D. So be very appropriate for the clinician to test the vitamin D level under those circumstances. And also, there are medications that can interfere with the metabolism of vitamin D. For example, there are some anti-seizure medications, some medications that are used to treat tuberculosis, other medications that may interfere with vitamin D metabolism. And so testing vitamin D levels in those patients can be important.
So now that we've talked all about vitamin D, what it is, and helpful information about the dosing, let's talk about some of the positive, exciting new science, things that are being studied about vitamin D. What shows promise? We've heard everything from, as we mentioned earlier, possibly preventing cancer, affecting depression, and other things. What are you seeing? What looks most promising to you in terms of the benefits of vitamin D?
Well, we're doing a large-scale randomized clinical trial of vitamin D at a dose of 2,000 IUs daily in close to 26,000 men and women around the country to test the role of vitamin D in the prevention of cancer and cardiovascular disease. It will be a 5-year trial. We're also looking at cognition, depression, mood, infections, diabetes, hypertension, heart failure, a number of other outcomes. The randomized trial is really looking at a large number of diseases. At this point in time, there is very little conclusive evidence that vitamin D has a role outside of bone health. So the evidence is strong that vitamin D is critically important to bone health, especially in combination with calcium. Vitamin D and calcium have been linked to better bone health. There's some evidence that vitamin D may have a role in improving balance and muscle strength and preventing falls, especially in the elderly. And that research looks very promising. This is another area that we are testing in the trial, looking at changes in strength and physical strength, muscle strength, balance, and number of falls that the participants are having during the trial. There's some promising evidence for an effect on diabetes, sensitivity to insulin, but it's not yet conclusive. There are some other randomized trials going on as well, testing the role of vitamin D in preventing diabetes, improving insulin sensitivity. Evidence promising, but far from conclusive at the present time. And then there's some evidence that vitamin D may prevent or lower the risk of heart failure, may have a role in affecting a hormone that's been linked to hypertension and to increased risk of heart failure, so that vitamin D may counteract that effect and be protective against heart failure. But again, that evidence is just promising and not conclusive. Overall, the evidence to date has been inconsistent for many of the outcomes outside of bone health. So, for example, there have been some small randomized trials looking at infections, looking at the risk of getting a cold, various viral infections or bacterial infections. And some trials have looked promising. Others have shown neutral results, absolutely no benefit. The trials related to heart disease events have been very inconsistent. Overall, no conclusive evidence that vitamin D will prevent cardiovascular events, but there's still a reason for optimism because the trials to date have not generally tested moderate to high doses. They've tested mostly lower doses that may not be high enough to really see these benefits. With cancer, there's been some promising evidence for colorectal cancer specifically, and we have an interest in looking at that cancer outcome as well as total cancer in our trial. But again, far from conclusive evidence that vitamin D supplementation can prevent cancer.
Dr. Joanne Manson is professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and chief of preventive medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
For more information on vitamin D and Dr. Joanne Manson, visit us at the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org. If you've missed a past interview or you'd like to hear one again, podcasts of our show are also available at our website and on iTunes.